The Institute of Child Nutrition is proud to present iBites. Here you will learn about all aspects of child nutrition programs, from research to resources, from oral histories to best practices. Each iBites episode features a wealth of information to help promote the continuous improvement of child nutrition programs. I'm Dr. LaWanda Morse, the Associate Director of Grants at the Institute of Child Nutrition, and I will be your host. Thanks so much, everybody, for joining us today for another episode of iBites. We are in the midst of what was going to be a four-part leadership series, but has now actually expanded to almost a year's worth of discussions with child nutrition leaders across the United States. There's just such a wealth of experience and the people who are in the programs that we just didn't feel like four episodes did it justice. So today we have with us another great child nutrition leader. We have Dr. Mary Kate Harrison from Hillsborough County Public Schools in Tampa, Florida, joining us via phone. Hello, Mary Kate. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today.
It's my pleasure. I'm honored to be interviewed with you, and I will enjoy the next few minutes talking about what I love to do.
Well, we appreciate that a whole bunch. Going to be very casual today, and let's just chat about your experience in child nutrition. So let's start with you just telling us a little bit about your current role there with Hillsborough.
Well, I've been in Hillsborough for a long time, and Hillsborough is the Tampa area. It's a very large school district. It covers urban, suburban, rural, inner city. We're a county school district, which makes it very diverse. And I've been here for 29 years, and I've been in this role for 29 years, and I've seen it grow and change and become one of the largest school feeding programs in the country, and we're very proud of what we do here. So it's a program that does about everything you can in school food service, meaning we just take advantage of all the programs and giving as much access of school meals to children as we can. So we feed everybody free for breakfast in the morning. We've been doing a free breakfast program for all children since around 2000. We've also waived the 40-cent charge for a reduced price lunch. Did that around 2003. And we've always kept our meal prices, I think, very reasonable for lunch. And we also offer a dinner program. We offer a very big summer food service program. We have mobile feeding trucks, and we do just about anything we can to serve the community.
So, Dr. Harrison, how many students do you have in your district?
About 220,000 students now.
Oh, wow.
Very growing community, as most of Florida is. Tampa's no exception. And we are about the sixth largest feeding program in the country.
Okay.
So we feed a lot of meals every day.
It sounds like you do. Those are a lot of little bodies.
It is. It is. We feed around 80,000 breakfasts every day and about 120,000 lunches.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And we also do a lot of a la carte meals as well. So the a la carte meals and the a la carte revenue really helps our total bottom line.
Sure. How did you get to Hillsborough? Is that where you started, or did you work your way up there, or what was your path, your career path?
You know, when you start out in school food service, you're never real sure where you're going to go. And first, I might say school food service career was not exactly on the horizon for me.
Okay.
I was in my master's program at Florida State, but I did just happen to fall into a job working in the training program for the State Department of Education, where they had me on the road going out and training school food service employees in different districts all through the state. And that was while I was finishing up my master's. And it made me think, you know, these people are really nice, and they're very appreciative of what you're doing for them, and they're you know, grateful, and they say thank you, and I'm like, this could be a good thing. So I kind of looked into it, and after I graduated, I ended up being the training coordinator for the State Department of Ed for their food and nutrition program. Stayed there for a short time and then became a director down in Vero Beach, Florida. And that was Indian River County, and it had a mere 18 schools. And I think probably they have 19 now, 29 years later. But it was a wonderful place for me to start. Wasn't overwhelmingly large. And, of course, I'd never been a director before. And I really always told the employees there that they trained me very well. And I learned so much from them that I was able to apply for this job in 1990. And just kind of did it at the spur of the moment. As usual with me, I sometimes make up my mind at the very last minute. And I turned it in on the deadline day and FedEx my application over. And then, lo and behold, by February, they had hired me.
That's awesome. So did you ever think when you submitted that application that you would be where you are today?
No, I think I kind of submitted it on a whim and thought, you know, well, I wouldn't mind living in Tampa. At the time, I was living in Vero Beach, and I was single, and often that's referred to as Zero Beach.
Oh, wow, okay.
But when you're single.
Right,
you know,
got it.
A little different. Mm-hmm. But I thought, well, you know, moving to a bigger city might be a little bit more fun and social. So when Tampa came open, several people actually encouraged me to apply. So I did not think I would be hired because of just the way those things usually went in that day and time. Mm-hmm. But I guess I won some people over, and they did hire me. And here I sit today looking at my retirement from Hillsborough County. So
that's amazing.
Would not have thought that I would have gotten here. But I went from 18 schools over there in Vero Beach, and I came into 153 schools. And
holy moly.
267 schools. So it's a real big jump for me, and it was dynamics were dramatically different from a small district to a large district. No question about it. It was a totally different playing field. And I had to really up my game when I got here. And I really had to learn a lot. And a lot of politics here were far more ingrained in the culture of the district and the community than it was in Vero Beach, which was a more open and a more collaborative type place. And it was different, but, you know, I've learned a lot and been able to, you know, really deal with those issues as they come. And like I said, here I am leaving. Of course, I still sometimes feel like I'm dealing with the same issues I dealt with maybe 15 years ago. But, you know, the people change, the story mm-hmm. changes. You just keep dealing with some of the same things. So
two things you said kind of spurred me to think. One, you mentioned that several people encouraged you to apply. So one of the things that I've noticed as I've interviewed various leaders is that frequently people who are in leadership positions, we often question ourselves, and but other people see that leadership in us and encourage us to do and be more. So do you see that same thing, and or do you experience that with your staff? Are you constantly looking for those leaders?
I am. And I think I've found most leaders are pretty introspective, you know, and they're always looking for how to be better, how to do more, how to be a better motivator, be more inspirational to the people they're around. And I think we're always trying to push ourselves. And I see that in people who really want to be good leaders. But I think you're right. I think sometimes we kind of question, you know, how well we're doing or how well we could be doing in perhaps another role. And I know I've had to push some people to say, you know, you can do this. And I've got your back, and you're going to be good at it because we're going to do it together. And it's nice to see those people really blossom and grow on their own and become more confident and be able to walk by themselves, make decisions by themselves, and move forward, you know, without having to fall back on somebody to always and encourage them and tell them that they're doing okay. And it's very rewarding when you see that in people that you work with.
So the second thing you mentioned was that you had learned a lot. So if you could identify one important leadership lesson that you've learned, what would you pull out as being that lesson?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right?
A tough one, I tell you. You know, I think when I say I've learned a lot, it's certainly not so much about the mechanics of school food service. I think, you know, I knew a lot of the basics when I got here. And, of course, the program's always changing. You've got
right.
Tools, you've got new things to kind of wrap your brain around. And we always go through with that. But I think the hardest part of being in a large district, or maybe any district, is just, again, working with so many different people in a collaborative way and trying to pull different people in. I'm not talking about from your department. I'm talking about from finance and HR and the superintendent's office and the maintenance department and your construction department, and how you've got to, you know, collaborate with so many people outside of your student nutrition department that your negotiating skills need to be really spot on. You know, you need to know how to go in and present what you want, make good, detailed, data-driven proposals, and then you need to follow through, you know, with answering people's questions and concerns, and then you need to stick with it, you know. And I learned to stick with things. For example, when I proposed doing away with the 40-cent price for reduced price meals back in around 2001, several leaders were like, you know, why do you want to do that? You know, that's revenue. You know, you shouldn't want to do that. You know, we're not going to be subsidizing. And, you know, it took a lot of time to lay out how I wanted to do that, why I wanted to do it, you know, with the data. You know, for example, our reduced price kids weren't eating with us. There was only half of them that were eating. And these kids needed a good lunch, just like, you know, the kids that had free meal benefit.
Right, sure.
So I said, you know, if we did this, this is what I predict will happen. And, you know, and I think you always have to have your facts straight. You have to be very clear, very concise, spot on with your data. You need to have the answers. And we were able to convince them that we would be able to provide access to more kids. More kids would take advantage. And in the long run, we don't have that many reduced price kids. We would have to add extra staff to serve them and that sort of thing. So anyhow, at the end of the day, we were able to you know, persuade them to move forward with that initiative. And lo and behold, it's always good to wrap around and say, look what happened when everybody approved this. And we went from serving 50% to 90% of our reduced.
Oh, wow. That is,
you know,
amazing.
Our kids who need a meal. So I think your negotiating skills and the ability to and with that, you know, having data, following through, if you get a no answer, keep at it, being very tenacious and persistent, going back to the table to negotiate again. You know, often I told by district leaders, I said, you know, I'm a bad headache. I'm just not going to go away. And they kind of would go, yeah, we know, you're not. So I'm like, this is a good idea, and I'm not going to let go of it. So, you know, it's that tenacity along with, you know, getting your negotiating skills together, your data together to be able to present a story. You know, you always want to be able to present a story and be able to kind of get people to visualize what will happen if we can feed more kids, you know. And in the education environment, you typically want to link those benefits of our program back to children doing better in the classroom and back to graduating.
Right.
You know? That's where you want to go when you're talking to educators. You've got to tell them what's in it for them and what is the win for education.
Sure.
So,
that tenacity, do you feel that that's something that can be developed, or is that just a skill that a leader has? And if you don't think that, how can somebody develop that skill?
I think over time, people could develop it if they really decide they want some. I have seen many people back off and say, well, they said no, or they're not interested, or they don't want to pursue it.
Right.
And they'll just back down, and they'll go, you know, end of story, I'll move on. And I think if it's something you're passionate about or know is right and know will help kids in our case and give something back to the community, I think you have to fight for it. And, you know, at times I wish I hadn't had to fight for it for something so hard. You know, it got tiring.
Sure.
As I mentioned, coming from a large district, where things were more easily discussed and perhaps accepted, in a big district, that was not part of the culture. You know, it was, I once had a boss tell me, he says, you know, it's just easier for me to say no.
Yes.
It's just easier, Mary Kate, if I just tell you no, and then, you know, I won't have to sit here and listen to all this. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to let up. And he's like, yeah, I'm afraid you're not. So, you know. So, you know, I didn't let him off the hook. I mean, obviously, he worked with me on things.
Right.
It's always easier to say no, you know, if you don't want to be bothered with something. So I think some people have that drive and the skill to be able to move things forward. I don't know that is inherent in, you know, managers. I would hope it would be in good leaders. I think the best way to try it is try to do it once. And, you know, if you have a win that builds confidence and you can see about doing it again. Now, I've not been successful in everything I've tried, you know. But I would say my batting average is pretty good.
Well, I think you said the key to me was when you said it's what you're passionate about. You know, if it's a topic, especially when you're in the child nutrition field, and you are truly passionate about that, you are willing to go to bat for pretty much whatever it takes for the kiddos.
You are. And I know that's really apparent with a lot of people in this profession around the country. You know, they like what they're doing, and they want the best for kids and feeding children. And, you know, we're the oldest, most successful hunger, anti-hunger program ever. And what an opportunity we've got to be able to, you know, push the agenda with our program into all sorts of other avenues, which fortunately we've been able to do with things like the dinner program and mobile feeding sites. And you know, we did not wait for the government to say, hey, we're going to offer free breakfast to everybody. We just decided we would do it. And we decided we would eliminate that 40 cents for reduced price kids. But we did that on our own. And part of the reason we could do that is because we're a financially sound business enterprise here. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the other part of it. When you're asking for something, you want to make sure that your side of the business is being efficient and it's effective, and you're doing everything you can to, you know, have a good profit loss at the end of every month. So very important to have all your business P's and Q's lined up before you, you know, you're going to ask for other things as well.
Did you know that that was a such an important part of that role when you first came into the leadership position, or is that a something that you kind of had to learn the importance of?
I don't think I understood the bigger picture of it when I came. With Indian River, it was different. It was just it was a low economically needy community as well. And I don't think I clearly understood the finances or certainly all the issues of running a good enterprise program over there. But when I got here, you know, I was clearly told when I was hired that this particular school food service program had been losing money for 3 years prior to me coming. I mean, losing like $2.5 million a year.
Oh, wow.
And it had done that for the 3 years prior. So at that point, the school district was bailing them out through the general fund. So I was put on notice when I was hired that you need to be able to turn this program around and find some solid financial footing. So I didn't have much of a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Was I real experienced with doing that? Nope. But I think intuitively I knew enough to know what I needed to start on. And, you know, I started where my biggest expenses were, food and labor.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to make some tough decisions in those first 4 years. They were way overstaffed. Their meals per labor hours were just at 6 and 7 when they should have been at 18 to 22. And it was not an easy time. The first 4 years here was tough. Now, with that being said, the district actually did support some of the things I was doing. You know, when I said I had to cut as much as 60 labor hours from a high school.
Wow.
They supported me. Now, obviously, we had a very large placement pool. We just moved a bunch of people around, and through attrition, we lowered our staff. And, you know, there were other schools that were understaffed. So what I did was just kind of move all the staff around. And through the next 2 or 3 years, you know, we didn't hire anybody new, didn't use substitutes and so forth. So, you know, we got our staffing under control, and at the same time, you know, we had to get our food costs under control. And the food costs were high. Managers were allowed to do their own menus. They were allowed to buy from whomever they wanted. It was a disaster. So I put a lot of things in place. We probably reduced our food costs within the first year. Within the second year, I rewrote all the bids, did everything new, different. and was able to move forward with a new bidding system, and meaning that the managers had to follow the menu, had to buy from the correct vendors. So there was a lot of crying. There was lots of unhappy employees. There were people complaining about me. There were some retirements from our managers. And I will say the district supported me as I made all those hard decisions. They never once came to me and said, you know, you need to back off. Everybody's upset. I clearly told them, again, going back to data and facts, if you want to make a change here, which we need to, or you're not going to be financially solvent, you're going to have to allow me to do what I'm doing, and that is to try to get the labor and the food under control. So within 4 years, we had a $5 million fund balance.
That's great.
So we broke even in 2 years, and in 4 years had that $5 million balance. And it was clear we were going in the right direction. Employees got more on board. You know, I said there were a lot of employees that were so upset about so many changes. I mean, I'm talking really upset. But, you know, there were other employees who said, you know, oh my gosh, we always knew that things weren't being run right. We always knew there were things that needed to be changed. We always knew we were losing money, but nobody would do anything about it. You know, we're so glad you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you always have those two sides, you know.
Right.
It wasn't just the people crying that I was making them doing a production record now, but it was those that were really saying, hey, finally we're getting some structure. And, you know, most employees like structure. They like being, they like knowing what to do. I mean, they like knowing what their job is.
Agree.
They like having a work schedule. They like knowing what their goals are. And, you know, so the program is so different. You wouldn't even, you know, recognize it. It's been in the same district as it was 29 years ago. But there were some hard choices to make. They really were. You know, I was shocked and astonished when I got here because I thought a big district would have been so much more on top of things. That's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends back on who's the leader, right?
You're exactly right.
So it doesn't matter if you've got a 3,000 kids or 300,000. It's all about the leader in charge and in what they were doing. So obviously my leadership was dramatically different than the person that had preceded me. And people got used to me. A few people would say, you know, I've never worked for a woman. And I've never worked for someone as young as you are. And I was like, well, how's that going for you? I
mean, right. Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that
what Dr. Phil says on his show when somebody says something? And how's that working for you?
Yeah. How's that going for you? Well, you know, I'm getting kind of used to you, you know. And then they would finally concede, well, it does seem like you know what you're doing. And I'm like, well, thanks, you know, for that vote of confidence. But anyhow.
Was there a time, Dr. Harrison, where you felt like a decision that you made resulted in maybe not a failure, but it didn't go quite like you had planned? And then how did you bounce back from that? Because you've obviously experienced a lot of success there, but as leaders, we know that there are times when not everything goes the way we have planned.
Absolutely. You do take risks, and sometimes they don't pay off.
Mm-hmm.
And not as good as you thought it would be. I think more recent, in the past decade, you know, we've had a very viable catering program. And it was something we pushed for, and it's been very successful. But we're kind of backing off of that because it's almost gotten too much attention over what we do for kids every day.
Oh, okay.
And I have said, I think we've done some good things with cake. I mean, it's just, like I said, it's just become very popular. Everybody in the community uses it, which is all good. But it's very hard to break even with a catering unit. And I feel like we have spent too much time where we could have spent maybe better time and better use of our energy in concentrating on our program for kids. So I've kind of backed off of that. I think it's a good way to promote your program, and people know school food service, you know, by this wonderful catering program. It shows that we can do lots of other things and just serve macaroni and cheese. But it's at the same time, I felt like we had a few people just spending too much time with that. I'm like, you know, we really need to redirect our energy and our goals back to some other things for kids.
So really, in both instances, where you were talking about being successful and then reconsidering this, it's really that constant reevaluation of what you've got going on.
You're right, and that is so true. I think it's so easy to get something done, do it, move on, do the next thing, move on, and you don't go back and reevaluate. And I think that is something I'm always challenging my staff to do. You know, let's go back and reevaluate. We've done this, but do we need to move away from it? Do we need to change it? Do we need to stop doing it for a while and bring it back? You know, we've done that with some promotional marketing type things and such. But I think with some of these bigger things, we sometimes need to drop back and look at it. You know, one thing that's helped our summer program so much are our mobile food trucks, and we have 5 now. And, you know, we need to constantly look how we can use those, you know, during the year. So we're always looking for ways. Like right now, we're looking at, can we go to a boys and girls club at the end of the day and serve dinner? You know, can we try to get parents involved in a parent-child program at a, you know, educational center in the afternoon with a dinner program? We're always looking for other ways we can integrate what we do and into the community. And that's why I don't want to fall too much on something like catering, which is a good thing. And other districts do it. I mean, it's good, and catering certainly does things, but I think we have to take our efforts off of there and elsewhere.
So you clearly are one of those introspective leaders. Is there something that you do that's part of your daily habit that you feel like makes you be a success? Maybe it's part of that introspection you do, or... but is there anything daily that you do you feel that makes you be better at your job?
I think one thing I do, which is real simple, and it's somewhat of a no-brainer, but I do not see other people do this, is I really believe in the old adage, management by walking around. I walk my building at least once a day. And I talk to employees. I may ask them how their mother is, or if their son is out of the hospital, or I may ask them about a project they're working on, or I may just come in and say, you know, tell me what you're doing right now, you know, or where are we on those marketing materials we design? When are they going to be distributed? And I do that, I include our custodians. I include all the employees back there in our culinary kitchen. And I like just being able to touch, you know, people in different ways during the day. I'm not much of an office. I don't like to sit too long in the office. And I think I did that early on. Obviously, my staff has grown dramatically. I've got 85 people in my building. But where maybe it wasn't such a big deal back in the 90s because our offices were smaller crew. But you know what? I never saw the leaders in the district doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw, you know, my boss come by and speak to the secretary or come by to sit down and say, hey, you doing all right? What are you working on? And I think, you know how you shape what you do by sometimes observing other leaders?
Yeah.
And you go, I want to be better than that. So I want to be more engaged with all the people that work with me. And I've really tried to do that over the years.
You know, I think it's that old adage, what is it? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. It really is that relationship building, regardless of what industry we're in, that is so important when it comes to being a good leader.
I try. I'm sure, you know, I fail at it sometimes and don't do. Somebody might say I don't do enough, and others might say, you know, oh, here she comes again. But I think at the end of the day, you know, I try to reach out as much as I can.
So what do you enjoy most about your job?
The most enjoyable part of my job is going to the school kitchen. It's going to the kitchen, talking to the manager, watching the kids get their food, looking at what's being cooked, looking at a recipe with a production coordinator, talking and joking around with the employees. That is probably my favorite thing to do. Do I get to do that as much as I want? No, I don't. But I do enjoy it.
That's one of those sacrifices that comes with being in a leadership position, unfortunately, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, it is.
It is. I hate to say I don't get out enough. Probably used to get out more than I do now, but every time I go back in the kitchen and just talk to the employees, and they're all, you know, hey, how are you doing? It's so good to see you. And, you know, and to be honest, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's what you're learning. I mean, mm-hmm. You're saying, you know, is what we're doing down in the district office really helping? And, of course, I have people out supervising all the nutrition programs. I mean, there are people out in the field all the time. But I love going in and looking at it with my perspective and, you know, seeing, you know, is what we're doing really working? Or should we do something different? And then, of course, seeing the employees, it's really nice. So, yeah, I wish I could do it more, but it's something I try to do, and it will continue to try to do.
Well, you mentioned retirement. How close are you, Mary Kate?
Very. I'm going to be out by December 31st.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm ready.
That's awesome. I bet. I have started to get the 5-year itch. I'm down to 3 years.
You.
And which is hard to believe, but it's like, you know, I can't imagine what it gets like when you get, you know, within that year and you're just so ready. you've had a great career and a great success, but you see the end in sight. The light's getting brighter, as a friend of mine said.
It is. And, you know, you really get to the point where you're going, you know, you do get tired of all the negotiations.
Sure, absolutely.
So, I mean, today I found out one of our board members wants to rewrite the emergency meal policy and basically let everybody have a free meal whenever they want it. And nobody consulted me. Nobody talked to me. Nobody. So I'm getting all my data together, all my information together, and trying to send it up to the superintendent, to my boss, saying we can't move forward with this. And let me tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, I'm tired of doing this.
Right.
I'm tired. Yeah. You know, when you've been doing it as long as I have, which is a total of 35 years, and it's been more so in, I mean, this job than the past 29 years, it just becomes, it's time for me to do something else.
My husband, he was commenting the other night, so he's a band director, and he's been in education. This starts his 22nd year, I believe. And he said he remembers being a young band director and people who were nearing retirement, who were his mentors at the time, saying, it really is a young person's game. He said he's kind of reached the point in his career now where he really begins to see that. Of course, he's just like you, is still very passionate about what he does. But and you never give up on that fight. But he says the fight never stops. And he said he easily sees how, as you have been in the field for a long time, whatever the field may be, that, that fight gets harder and harder sometimes. So
it does. And sometimes you go, why are we still having these fights?
Right. But then when you stop and think what you're doing it for, it makes it all worth it.
So sometimes I'm like, I can't believe we're even having this conversation. But,
right.
It's part of it. So anyhow, I think, they'll move on and move forward after I leave, and as I will too.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate your dedication to the time that you've been in that position. I know you've made a world of difference.
Thanks, LaWanda.
Thank you so much, Mary Kate, for taking time out of your day and your busy schedule and just chatting with me and discussing things that new leaders and old leaders and those of us who are looking just to improve being a leader can do.
Yeah, exactly. And thanks for the way you did the interview. It was very nice. I liked it.
Well, I appreciate it. I wish you all the best in the future and in your retirement. So listeners, until next time.
Tune in next month for more iBites. And until then, remember, there's nothing more important than the health and well-being of our nation's children. This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-50-9410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.